Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Brenda Davis. Thanks for making the time, Brenda.
Well, it's really my pleasure. Nice to be back.
Brenda, can you tell our listeners what brought you to the path of veganism?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think like a lot of kids, I was very, very sensitive to the plight of animals. I was picking worms off the sidewalk and just always making friends with animals. And I remember when my turtle died when I was about 2 years old, my parents had to have a full-blown funeral for him. So I've always been sensitive. But then as you get older, you kind of, society desensitizes you somehow. And then what actually happened to me was I just was always interested in the idea of vegetarian, but I'd never actually met any real live vegetarians until I was about 12 years old. My science teacher was a vegetarian and I thought it was just the coolest thing. And then when I went to university for nutrition, it was so anti-vegetarian. It was, you know, we learned one thing about vegetarian diets: they're risky. Vegan diets, they're downright dangerous. That was it. That was the extent of my education, you know, and that was close to 40 years ago. But it was just kind of took the wind out of you, you know, when you were, I was just naturally interested in that. But what happened to me was I found my husband and I have been married for 42 years and our diet kept progressing towards a more and more sort of plant-based diet. We started eating more lentils and tofu. But what put me over the edge was my husband's best friend, who was his best man at our wedding, was on his way deer hunting. And he called and said, "Can I stop by for coffee on my way?" And I thought, you know, I am going to do everything in my power to stop him from killing another deer. And so we're sitting there and I started asking him why he felt okay about going into the bush with this big gun and shooting this beautiful, innocent animal who I think deserves to live. And it was actually what he responded to me that changed the course of my life. It literally pushed me off the edge. He said, you know, just because you don't have the guts to pull the trigger does not mean you're not responsible for the trigger being pulled. Uh-huh. Every time you buy your piece of meat camouflaged in cellophane in a grocery store. And then he said, at least the animals I eat have had a life before they die. I doubt you can say the same for the ones sitting on your plate. And it was the first time someone had forced me to take responsibility for the food I was eating. And it was a wake-up call. And it made me want to dig deeper into animal agriculture. And I just started doing research and trying to find out what I could find out about animal agriculture. My mom grew up on a farm when she was a little girl and they had names for all their animals. And, you know, it was that story of, you know, the storybook farm little kids imagine. And that was kind of what was in my mind. And I'll tell you, when I started looking at it, I just thought to myself, I can't continue to contribute to this kind of pain, suffering, and death in the world when I don't have to. I'm a dietitian. I know how to put together a diet without causing this anguish. And so I remember making, you know, that decision and going to my husband and saying, I want to become completely vegetarian. I don't want to eat animal products anymore. And I just am wondering, and we had two little kids at the time, and I was a public health nutritionist, and I just asked him if he would be willing to do that with me. And I couldn't believe his response. He was raised in Northern Ontario. It's hunting, fishing country. And he just looked at me and he smiled and he said, "I thought you'd never ask. I would love to be a vegetarian." He said, "You know, that's the best way to leave a softer footprint on the planet." And he said, "That's something I've just always really wanted to do." And so I just thought I was so lucky. I was so lucky because not very many men, especially in Northern Ontario and 30 years ago, would have responded quite that way.
That's great. Well, you know, and speaking of sort of your path in this field, and you talk about how vegetarianism wasn't really, I'm sure, much of a topic of at all in terms of schooling and education. What are you, I mean, how are you feeling now about how far things have come in terms of how the medical field is finally slowly, but positively responding to plant-based diets?
It's just wild. I mean, if somebody would have told me 30 whatever years ago it was that we would be this far in my lifetime, I'm not sure I would have believed them. But what you know, the things that I've seen, the changes that I've seen are just mind-boggling. And I'll tell you one of the biggest ones. When we wrote, so I've written 12 books on this topic, and I actually just yesterday released my 12th book with my co-author, who's a pediatrician by the name of Reshma Shah. The book is called Nourish, and it's sort of the definitive plant-based nutrition guide for families. But so 12th book, and I can remember with the very first book, it was called Becoming Vegetarian, and it was a vegan book in disguise. Because we knew at that time the word vegan wasn't very well accepted. So we called it Becoming Vegetarian. But we actually had a chapter called Without Meat and another chapter called Without Dairy. So how do you survive without meat? How do you survive without dairy? And the dairy industry in Canada thought that it was going to be a book that would promote dairy and say, well, if you're not meat, you need a ton of dairy, right? And when they read the book, they actually took a full page ad out in our professional dietetic journal to try to discredit us. And there were, you know, my co-authors and I at that time, and they wrote a 45 page rebuttal to the book, made it free of charge to any health professional that wanted it. I mean, they were running scared that there had never been RDs, registered dietitians, that actually had the courage to say you could survive without dairy. And you know, it was really something. And here we are 30 years later, however many, it's close to 30 years later. And our Canadian National Food Guide no longer has a dairy group. I mean, our food guide, the old four food groups, it is now a plate, which is half fruits and vegetables, one quarter grains, and one quarter protein rich foods, which includes dairy and meat and all of that. But they put a huge emphasis on choosing plant sources of protein first and making that a priority. And there is no longer a designated dairy group. It's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. And yes, we had a role in that. And we've been, you know, lobbying our government for years to move in that direction. And my co-author, Vasanto Molina, just won the highest award offered by Dietitians of Canada. And after the, you know, she did her big lecture and received the award. She's 78 years old now. But she was approached by one of the people that was responsible for allowing that dairy ad into our professional journal that so many years ago. And she actually apologized for ever allowing that in the journal. And it's just, we've come full circle, and it's been just really quite astonishing. And now I'm involved with the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, and we do all sorts of wonderful projects. The first American College of Lifestyle Medicine annual conference, I think there were 100 people. Now they shut it down at 1500, and it's mostly physicians. And it's the same with the Plantrician Project. They started out so small, and now it's always around 1500 people. And it's just really quite extraordinary. So the interest is growing.
I was just wondering if it's trickling down into the medical school or the dietitian curriculum, because like you said, you only heard one thing when you were taking your courses.
Yes. Yeah, there's no question that it is definitely starting to trickle down. And there's a course in the UK for health professionals that's plant-based nutrition. There's a master's of lifestyle medicine and a lifestyle medicine component of the medical school in Lithuania now that's completely plant-based. There, Michael Clapper, as you, I'm sure you're very familiar with, is speaking at medical schools all over the place on on lifestyle medicine, really. And there's just growing interest, and there are a lot more students that are entering these programs that are, you know, keen plant-based advocates. And in fact, in the last month or so, I spoke for the University of Alberta, sort of plant-based, medical students who were putting on a special event, and I spoke for the UBC medical students a couple weeks before that, and so there's just more and more interest, and it's very exciting to see.
Well, hopefully it'll trickle down into Texas before long.
We're
a little bit slower. We're a little bit slower here. I gave a talk at Texas Tech Medical School some years ago, and none of the medical students knew who Hippocrates was.
One of the
first vegetarians, and the oath that they had to take, and they didn't know him. So
we've got to wait. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you mentioned lifestyle medicine too, because I know that's become more into my vernacular recently. With the Veg Society here hosted an event where and people could still check out. It's a film called Code Blue, and the focus was on lifestyle medicine, and it's exciting. It gives some hope, I think, for our country to sort of hopefully perhaps catch up to Canada in some different ways, but.
It's a wonderful, wonderful film.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I've been really privileged to be quite heavily involved in lifestyle medicine world, and I was part of a team of researchers doing a lifestyle medicine intervention in the Marshall Islands. And my partner was Dr. John Kelly, who actually founded the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. And then he and I went up into Lithuania and did a lifestyle medicine demonstration project where we had 10 patients and we put them through a very intensive program. And so we've, done a number of things together, and I've been involved in, working on a consensus statement for diabetes with them right now, and worked on a diabetes a continuing education project for physicians. And so it's just so exciting to see how the American College of Lifestyle Medicine has grown in the last 15 years. There are lifestyle medicine branches all over the world now. It's just wonderful.
Speaking of diabetes, Brenda,
could you just tell our listeners what lifestyle medicine encompasses besides a plant-based diet?
Yes, so lifestyle medicine is really a way of practicing medicine that gets to the root causes of disease. And so a lot of the diseases that people suffer from, diabetes and heart disease and many cancers, are very much lifestyle induced. And so lifestyle includes diet, it includes exercise, it includes fresh air and sunshine, it includes stress management, and all of the things that we would think of as being a component of a healthy lifestyle. And not everyone agrees on what the perfect diet is for lifestyle medicine. So there are some folks who practice lifestyle medicine that are promoting, a Paleolithic diet, for example. But the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, I'm very happy to say, is absolutely plant-based. So that's a wonderful thing.
Speaking of diabetes, this is Diabetes Awareness Month, and it's an epidemic here on the border in El Paso, 1 in 10 people have been diagnosed with diabetes.
Yeah.
And it's due to food choices mostly, and yeah. and other, you know, factors. So I know you've done a lot of research in your program in the Marshall Islands, and you've written books about defeating diabetes. So give us a brief way that people here on in El Paso can reverse their problems with diabetes.
Yes, and thank you for saying that, because type 2 diabetes is largely reversible. For most people, it is a reversible disease. It's a disease of insulin resistance. And insulin resistance is caused by, you know, a number of things, lipotoxicity, which means you're storing fat in places fat shouldn't be stored, like your liver and your muscle tissue. It's caused by oxidative stress and inflammation and dysbiosis, which is a very unhealthy gut microbiome. And when you change your diet, you change all of those things. And I've actually spent, a lot of time going through exactly how to reverse this disease in a couple of books, actually very recent books, Kick Diabetes Essentials and the Kick Diabetes Cookbook. And so going through, so what you really want to do is you want your diet, first of all, exercise is hugely important in reversing diabetes. But in terms of diet, what you want to do is you want your diet to maximize all the most protective components in foods and to minimize all of those components that are harmful, that contribute to your disease. And so you really want a very whole food, plant-based diet. You want your grains to be unprocessed. So instead of eating a bunch of flour products, even whole grain flour products, you're wanting to eat the grains intact. So you're eating barley, you're eating kamut berries, you're eating quinoa, you're eating these intact grains. They have a much lower impact on your blood sugar than grains that are ground and turned into breads and muffins and crackers and so forth. And then you're wanting to include beans. If you can include them 2 or 3 times a day, that's perfect. They have a very small impact on blood sugar. They're the highest fiber foods we have, and they're wonderful sources of protein and iron and zinc. And then you want to be having at least 10 servings of colorful fruits and vegetables. You want a wide variety of fruits and vegetables, because that helps to maximize the variety of phytochemicals and antioxidants in those foods. And then you want to include some nuts and seeds, and relatively small amounts, but especially the seeds. And you want to focus on those that are richer in omega-3 fatty acids. Mm-hmm. So like chia seeds and ground flax seeds and hemp seeds, and in terms of nuts, the walnuts would also qualify there. So those are the foods that you really want to be focusing on. You don't want to be adding sugar. You don't want to be adding a lot of concentrated fats and oils. You want to be getting your fats from whole foods, and you want to be getting your protein from whole foods and your carbohydrates from whole foods. You want the diet to be very high in fiber. And this will promote a healthy gut microbiome. It will put a lid on inflammation and oxidative stress, and it will start to help you reduce your body weight and reduce lipotoxicity, which is a driver of insulin resistance.
Hmm. Yeah, that's wow.
That's very good advice.
And I'm sort of curious, Brenda, I think for people that are first, I guess in your experience, have you figured out that there's how long in you are to having diabetes impacts, determines what sorts of food you eat? Because I guess I'm thinking about people who've had it for a long time versus people who've just barely, gotten the diagnosis. Yeah. Is there a difference in how you approach it?
There's not a huge difference in how we approach it, but there is a difference in your response. And so a person who's had diabetes for 20 years or more, they're going to be even more insulin resistant. And sometimes they have beta cell destruction as well as, well, they always have beta cell destruction, but more significant beta cell destruction. The beta cells are the cells that make insulin. So their insulin making machinery is not working very well either. And so it is easier to reverse the disease for someone who's only had it for a few years than it is for someone who's had it for 20 years. But all of that having been said, I've seen it be completely reversed in people who've had it for 20 years. And I'll tell you a little story as we wrap up, because I think it's so inspirational. I had a client who had cancer. He was 36 years of age, and he's actually in complete remission now, but I worked with him on diet, and his father had had diabetes for over 20 years. He had severe heart disease. He had hypertension. He had peripheral artery disease. He was in really rough shape. He was told by his doctor he probably would only live a couple more years. He was even going into kidney failure. And he decided to adopt the diet his son was on just so that they could eat together. He didn't think it would do anything for his health. Within a year, this man was on 17 pills a day and 40 units of insulin. Within a year, he was off everything. And every one of those diseases was completely reversed. Wow. And that is what is possible if people sort of go all the way, if they're willing to go all in and do it properly. And that's why I wrote the Kick Diabetes books, because I really want to support people with recipes, with practical, ideas of how to do this and how to do it well so that our food tastes fabulous. And it is possible. So I just want people to know that. Don't give up hope. There is hope for you.
Yeah, it's amazing how much food impacts our ability to have quality of life and for long periods of time. We're sort of getting to the end of the show, but I did just want to circle back real quick on the book that you mentioned earlier.
Nourish.
Yeah, the Definitive Plant-Based Nutrition Guide for Families. And I think, we're in the middle of holiday season and many people around the country are spending more time with just a few members of their family. Curious about, and I think this is great that the book is just coming out right now, so hopefully people will buy it. But do you have any suggestions for families that might be right now trying to figure out, how they want to get their health in order and how they want to improve their health, so that way, especially when they think about the pandemic, they don't want to be worried about underlying conditions and other health conditions.
Absolutely, and it really, I think for people, this book Nourish is so accessible, and it's we've really tried to make it not just for plant exclusive eaters, but for people who are plant curious, who are wondering, if they can do this and how they can do it. And so what I would suggest to people is to start slowly and just start adding in foods, add in, an extra fruit or vegetable to each meal. Try adding in, one or two bean dishes a week, and, use dishes from around the world, whether it's Mexican or Spanish or whatever, and then try to crowd out, the animal products in that way, and also the processed foods. We're wanting to rely much more on whole plant foods, and it's a lot of fun to do this. So I really encourage people to just start taking little baby steps. You don't have to do it all overnight.
Great, Brenda. And where can our listeners go to learn more about your work?
Definitely, we've got a website, nourishthebook.com, and then my personal website is brendadavisrd.com.
We've been talking with registered dietitian, internationally acclaimed speaker, and author Brenda Davis. Thanks, Brenda, for making the time and for all the great work that you're doing to help make people live happier and healthier lives.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. It was a real pleasure to be with you today.
Thanks, Brenda.
Thanks,
you
Brenda.
Bet. Thanks again for inviting me. Take care, and thanks for what you're doing.